Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 101 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight. With me is our official Airplane Geeks historian, David Vanderhoof. Hello, David.
Hello, Max. How are you? And hello to all of our listeners out there. Welcome to the next 100 episodes of Airplane Geeks.
That's right. Well, we also have with us Rob Mark, our man with bold opinion. Hi, Rob.
Hey, good evening to everyone around the globe.
Also, we have the fresh and youthful Dan Webb with us. Hi, Dan.
Hello, and I gotta say, I like those adjectives. Thank you. It makes me feel good about myself.
Good. Well, I'm glad you've got something that helps make you feel good.
I'm sorry.
Wow. That's just... Well said, Max.
I hope it's more than just me. Joining us this episode is the other guy from the Jetwine blog. That's Scott Spangler. Hi, Scott.
Hi. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Besides writing for Jetwine, Scott is an instrument-rated commercial pilot, the founding editor of Flight Training Magazine. I believe you launched and edited the NAFI Mentor, right? That was for the National Yep. Association of Flight Instructors. Mm-hmm. You have been editor-in-chief for the EAA publications.
Yeah, EAA publications. Did that for 7 years. So also started a scuba diving magazine called Dive Training.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
A real adventuresome guy, I guess, huh?
Yes. I'm an autodidactic polymath, which is just a fancy way of saying that I get bored easy.
Okay, Scott, you need to go. Okay, using that kind of vocabulary, you ain't going to fit in with this bunch.
Okay, well, that pretty much extended my word of the day selection for this week, so I'm pretty much done now.
Oh, that's pretty good, though.
And then I asked him one day if he wanted to write for a blog, and he said, huh?
What's a blog?
He said, let me think about that. What's a blog again? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but it's been fun.
Well, that's great.
Who knew Rob, Mark, and fun could go together?
Actually, I've known Rob for almost 10, 15 years. We met when I was back in the flight training days, just when he did his career book for the first time.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. And, back when we must have been teenagers then.
Yes, indeed. Oh, yeah. And reviewed the book. And, you know, we talked on and off. And then a couple of years ago, after EAA and I parted ways, he gave me a call and said, hey, would you be interested in writing? And we met at Starbucks here in Oshkosh.
Uh-huh.
And talked. And, you know, the rest has been history. And honestly, right. It's been the best gig I've had since I've been an aviation journalist.
I am so flattered to hear that. Wow. I've never heard you say that, but I mean, I'd be curious to know why you say that at some point. I mean, and don't feel like you have to
well,
say it
no,
on the radio.
Because
Scott, why do I have a feeling your annual review is coming up?
No, see, that's one of the reasons I left EAA is because of that corporate culture with annual reviews and all that other stuff. That's what's great about working with Rob. Is, you know, we just email back and forth and we're partners working to the same goal. And it's the best aviation writing gig that I've had because he allows me to pursue all of my bizarre little interests in aviation. You see, I have no particular vested interest in any aspect of aviation. So there are just different parts of it that I, you know, find attractive, and I get to write on them. And besides, what other aviation blog would allow me to write about a train trip to the East Coast?
That's true.
Good point.
But, you know, I did make a connection to aviation and related it to airline service, but, you know, it helped me write off the train trip for my stepson's wedding.
There, I know.
I see. So we're a tax dodge.
All right. Well, we've got some other pointed questions to ask you about Rob later. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the week's aviation news, of course. Coming up also, we've got David's This Week in Aviation. And the boys down under, Steve and Grant, have produced yet another great Australia Desk report. So we're going to listen to that, too. We've also got kind of a ton of listener mail that we're going to try to get to as much as possible. All that's coming up. But first, let's get on to the news. First story comes from Network World. This is FAA adds brain power to mix unmanned aircraft with commercial aviation. Now, what I found interesting about this story, guys, is that the FAA is doing a lot more than I knew about when it comes to looking at unmanned vehicles and how they can interact in the future with commercial aviation. And in fact, the FAA has just added another research project to understand, according to this article, how unmanned aircraft can be brought safely into the national airspace. So this is a 2-year research and development agreement with the company in situ. And as part of this deal, in situ is going to provide two of its Scan Eagle UAVs to the FAA. And under this arrangement, the FAA pilots and some support staff are going to fly and maintain these things in order to learn about them. This is also on top of a similar arrangement that the FAA signed with GE Aviation. This was last year. Also looking into how UAVs can be safely mixed in with commercial aviation. So, Rob, this is some pretty serious activity to look at UAVs and how this could all work together with commercial flights and other flights.
I think this is extremely serious, and I just wish that FAA had not used brain power and their acronym in the same line. because to me that kind of, you know, one kind of, you know, zeros out the other. But
yeah, well, no, actually, my two cents to it that, you know, FAA working UAVs into the commercial airspace mix is a no-brainer, especially once they get next gen up and running.
No-brainer because it's easy, or no-brainer because it's going to happen anyway?
I think it's going to happen anyway, and, you know, that I think that the UAVs with the manned airliners, for as long as they exist before they go unmanned, I think that they will integrate fairly well once they get the next gen technology up there that basically gives us, you know, the air traffic control a virtual view of the sky.
Once, you know, because they get next gen up and running, yes.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's
it's not going to happen overnight, but it's happening.
So UAVs, and this article points it out, I think, UAVs tend to be flown point to point as opposed to commercial aviation, commercial aircraft, which may fly on zigzag courses or other kinds of courses. But is the idea that with next gen, commercial aircraft will also be able to fly point to point?
Point to point, yeah. And really doesn't, you know, aside from getting in and out of Class B airspace, don't airliners now fly point to point, at least those that have ponied up, you know, to get like a Garmin, you know, 396 to stick up there in the windshield of their 777?
Let's see, what kind of an airplane, what, you know, when aircraft file IFR flight plans, they have to put in an equipment suffix in their flight plan.
Slash G. So
what is a 777 with a Garmin 396 stuck in the windshield? Can any of our listeners tell us that?
Yeah, not sure. Not sure what that would be.
No, I agree. I think it's – I'm sure it is probably coming. I know Scott and I have talked about this many times. I just worry about the day when, you know, some piece of – I mean, it's my PC that's flying the stupid machine, right? I mean, and it can't even – it can't quite get my Google Mail to me yet, so I'm probably
Rob, it can't be any more unreliable than humans. You know, that 80% of all airplane accidents are human error. You know, the Captain Sully is the exception, not the rule. And certainly, as they get down to a triple redundant software program, that the computer will be more reliable than the pilots that are coming through the training pipeline now.
Guys.
And they work for less.
But guys, they're still flown by people.
Right.
They're not autonomous yet. Go look at what a Scanly Eagle is. It's got a 8.5-foot wingspan. Mm-hmm. This is not a 747 chugging along unmanned. It's a tiny little aircraft, and there's one of the real problems. When you're flying at altitude in another aircraft, the odds of you seeing this Scan Eagle is going to be slim to nil. Mm-hmm. It's small, and I mean, you got to be able to avoid it using your electronics, but you're talking about human error. It's going to be human error that plate one is going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and mm-hmm. the other person is going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. So if they go down in Warren Grove, and Warren Grove's notorious for having things like bombs dropped on schools,
mm-hmm.
there'll be a problem. It's a manned vehicle. It's not, the person is not in the vehicle, but the person is operating it. We don't.
Yeah, and it'll be the same way with the airliners. You know, that cubicles will be in pilots will be in a cubicle in some office. You know, one pilot or per airliner reporting to like a squadron commander, who would be the captain who would oversee five flights. And you know, yes, that the UAVs today are small, but these are just the first and second generation. That it'll be fourth and fifth generation before we get to the airline UAVs. So that, and by then, that there won't be any VFR or uncontrolled traffic up in controlled airspace, so that the next gen system will know where everybody is.
Well, to me, it's clear that there are a number of issues that have to be worked out, and clearly the FAA is working on those mm-hmm. issues or some of them. But does anybody think that we'll see UAVs in the skies to any great degree before their time? In other words, is anyone concerned that we're going to move too quickly? Or do we think that the system itself is going to be conservative enough to make sure that everything is going to be okay before we start to see these?
I'll vote for too quickly.
You think it's going to happen too quickly?
Yeah, because I think the FAA is under such incredible, not just FAA, but the DOT is in such a state that they're under such incredible pressure to get Next Gen up and running and to prove its value that I just bet somewhere in there someone's going to say, and the better way, because let's face it, Next Gen is 10 years away if they get the funding. And while the technology's I agree with Scott, the technology's there, but the money's not there yet. And that's the real problem, is the Europeans are already way ahead of us on this.
Yeah, but I think that UAVs will happen in time, that nothing in this country, whether federal or corporate, happens very quickly. Hmm. So I think that they will, take off in their own good time.
So since I don't know anything about UAVs, I'll make the dumbest comments possible. First, since Rob said this was like a PC running everything and this would be a problem, clearly we need a Mac UAV, an iUAV, if you will. And secondly, it's also important because, as Rob will attest, UAVs were very important in this season of 24, which is the same thing as reality. So that is all I have to say.
Okay.
And Scott, now you know why we keep him around. It's that kind of insightful thinking that makes him such an asset to the podcast.
Okay.
He's a valuable dude.
Absolutely.
Hey, let's be honest. It was a good season.
All right. Now we've got a couple of stories about some interesting incidents. The first one comes from the Corbridge Journal.
Yeah, that's the paper in the UK.
Okay, the Corbridge Journal.
Uh-huh.
This is a story about Roy. Roy bought a paraglider on eBay, and Roy watched some video clips on YouTube about flying paragliders, and he actually read about, according to him, about half of the instruction book that came with this thing. And so he decided that he was going to begin his career as a paraglider
powered
pilot.
Paraglider pilot, yeah.
Yeah. So what he did is he tied a length of rope to his paraglider and to his car. And that was supposed to give him some kind of an anchor, I guess. A gust of wind came up, and instead of lifting him up, it slammed him down to the ground, with the result that he ended up breaking two of his vertebrae. So, Scott, how many things did this poor guy do wrong?
Just about everything, which makes him kind of a typical student pilot.
When was the last time you had anybody break anything, Scott?
Well, I had a student grab another one by the throat and throw him on the floor. Does that count?
Yeah, close.
life is interesting in the second chance room. It just goes to show that in our society today, people say, look at something on YouTube and say, oh, I can do that. But it's obvious that the boy never flew a kite.
Hmm.
He would have learned that, the wind, string, wink, smash, break your kite. Apparently he never played with one when he was a kid.
Well, Scott, let me ask you this. I mean, if someone does have an interest in doing, whether it's paragliding or a trike or a hang glider or something, what's the proper way to educate yourself so that you can be safe?
In the United States, you cannot fly a trike, a powered parachute, I'm not too sure about the powered paragliders, but you need a sport pilot certificate. So you go to your local sport pilot instructor that has a rating for a powered parachute or a trike or a light sport aircraft. And there is the powered paragliding PPGA, Powered Paraglider Association in the United States, which self-certifies its instructors, kind of like the they did under Part 103 with the ultralights. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's something that I really would like to do if they can find one big enough to haul my fat butt in the air. Yeah, well, I'm kind of a weight and balance problem. You know, Rob can tell you that I think I'm normal sized, and I'm just surrounded by dwarfs.
Everyone else.
But, yeah, well, I can attest to the fact that when I met Scott the first time, I was not prepared for a guy that's about six. What are you, about 6'4" or something?
Six five. Yeah, 6'5", 250 with a
stick. I looked at him and said, you're a big one. But, yeah, I don't know. I tend to think that this guy is a little odd, poor Roy. I mean,
no, really, he's not too uncommon in the ultralight 103 arena, especially in other parts of the world.
Yeah, they just grab anything and fly. A lot of the guys in England are like that.
But it's like most people. It's one of those things that they get just enough information to be dangerous to themselves, and then they don't think things through all the way.
Yeah, and I guess
did we send Roy a card?
No, but maybe we should.
Maybe we should send Roy we should have an award, a geek something or other that we give people for the dumbest story of the week or something. You know, who was it in Congress that had what was that award they used to give somebody, the golden something for the...
Oh, no, that was Harold Proxmire, Wisconsin. That was the Golden Fleece Award. To the guy that wasted the most taxpayers' money.
Well, don't the Darwin Awards still exist?
Yes. Yeah. But actually you have to be careful of that, because what do they say about tail dragger pilots and ground loops or pilots flying airplanes with retractable gear? Those that there are those who have and those who will. So if you give somebody an award for doing something stupid, you know, all that means is you move up on the list a couple of notches.
I never thought of that.
Well, I guess the point is that if you're interested in becoming involved in some aspect of aviation, go get some good instruction, find other people who are capable of giving you some instruction. And almost all forms of aviation have some kind of a national or regional club or organization that's devoted to that particular form of aviation. And you can get some advice there and some direction there.
I have to say, I was kind of impressed with the fact that in the photo that came with the story from UK. Got this journal live, I think, or something, but it had a picture of Roy lying on the ground, sort of propped up with his arm in a sling and a few other things. Yet he had a microphone in his hand talking to the media. Yes. I mean, now that's my kind of social media guy, boy. Yeah. Even in pain, he knows he has to get that story out.
Right. Well, you know, it's not always the inexperienced who can be involved in aviation incidents. And we had another one recently, and this was reported by the Chicago Tribune. This is Legend of Flight Crashes on PR Run. And this is a story about a Boeing steerman that was involved in filming as part of some public relations event for an upcoming movie. And this occurred at Washington's Reagan National Airport. This beautiful steerman comes in for a landing, touches down, and immediately flips on its back, ends up upside down on the runway. Now, fortunately, no one was injured. There was the pilot and a reporter for the Washington Post, but they were both uninjured. And Dan, I understand that you were somehow involved in this accident.
Well, saying involved makes me sound like I was responsible, but no, I was there.
Did you distract them or something?
No. What happened was this was...
He was down in Gravely Point, pointing his point shoot at the steerman on final approach.
Well,
point and shoot has finally brought down an airplane.
Yeah.
What happened was, actually, this was... This was part of a press event for this new IMAX movie called Legends of Flight, And it was debuting at the Air and Space Museum, but the producers were having a press event at the airport beforehand, and with the airport have the eight Stearman biplanes come in. But before I talk about the accident, just because I feel bad for the PR agency who was running this, because I feel no one was talking about what they were hoping to. Legends of Flight is an awesome movie, and it's going out to IMAX theaters across the country over the next few months. I know right now the first one's it's actually at both Air and Space Museums, the one on the Mall and the one at Dulles. Google the movie, try to find it. It's a great movie. It's about 45, 50 minutes long, just like most IMAX movies, but it centers around the Boeing 787 test pilot, my character, as the main character. And it's really good, actually. The point of the movie is actually to try to get more kids interested in aviation and more just math and science in general. So it's a really good movie. I'd highly recommend it. But anyway.
Well, flipping the airplane is kind of – that's quite a publicity stunt.
Well, it got the word out about the accident, but I don't think people – there was a lot of reports about the movie, period. But anyway, so I'm at this press event with John Astrower, and we're at the press event enjoying our lovely quiche. And then we go out – I'm sorry. That was probably unnecessary detail. Anyway, we go out to the
balcony. Actually, it was, but that's okay.
Anyway, but we go out to the balcony around Terminal A to catch the arrival of these biplanes, and we just sit there, and one of them flips over. There's really nothing much else to say, and I think just there are about maybe 30 people on the balcony. And there's this huge, like, collective gasp / scream of horror. But it was incredible. Just they flipped over, and actually our view was blocked when a U.S. Airways A319 was taxiing.
Yeah.
And then once that was no longer blocking our view, we'd see the pilot and passenger gotten out okay, unscathed. So that was incredible.
Rob, did you or Scott see the video? Can you tell what happened? Why this plane flipped over?
Yeah, if you will. Actually, I saw the video that you sent, and I also read the story and saw the in cockpit video taken by Ashley Halsey III, who is the transportation writer, and it's a guy, by the way. It's a male Ashley, not a female Ashley.
Yes,
who shot the cockpit video, and what I saw the touchdown and compared the two. I'm going to guess that somebody had their feet on the brakes when that Stearman touched down.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah, because as soon as it touched, I mean, he was doing a very nice approach coming in, just tail low, kind of a tail high 3-point position. And as soon as those main wheels touched the ground, I saw smoke coming off of both sides. I heard a chirp in the reporter's video, which, you know, the rubber skidding on pavement, and in slow motion, over it went. So I'm going to guess that maybe Ashley had his feet on the brakes.
Uh-oh. Well, we can listen to a little bit of that video from the cockpit.
There was a promotion for the film Legends of Flight, which is an IMAX movie that's coming out, and they gave me an opportunity to fly in this plane. We had a beautiful flight. There were eight planes flying down the Potomac River. And as we came in for a landing, the plane that I was in flipped over.
You okay?
Yep, I hope you're. As you would imagine, it happened very quickly, and suddenly we were upside down lying on the runway, and the pilot and I made sure that we were each okay and got clear of the plane.
Let's get away from the airplane.
Yeah, it is an interesting, very interesting video from the cockpit.
But the airplane is designed for that kind of work.
The tone of voice of the pilot. You okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, guys, if you had been around Texas in 1940, this was a daily event with these things.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm sure there have been more Stearmans flipped over their back in the 40s than most modern aircraft have ever had a major accident. So it was designed to be a trainer. It was designed to be hard. It was designed to be rough. And I have a feeling that that little aircraft will be flying again in a couple of years once they fix the propeller.
Yeah, I'll lay you money that this was not that airplane's first accident.
Yeah, most likely.
It's on its eighth rebuild. But I watched the video, too, and I kind of agreed with Scott. There's not a whole lot you can do on a tail dragger that would produce that immediate a response and roll the airplane around that axis. I mean, I can't think of anything that could have done that. I mean, maybe either they touched the brakes or the wheels were locked for some other reason, but that to me looked like those wheels weren't even turning when they touched down.
Yeah, I mean, the other option is, you know, if they were landing at MiGs, is they, you know, rolled the main wheels into one of Mayor Daly's trenches across the runway at Trent. Oh, no. But that's the only thing that would put it on its back like that.
Well, I can tell you, if that had been me and I'd been in that airplane when it flipped over, I wouldn't have said, how you doing? You okay? Yeah, I would have said, holy shit.
Yeah, well, we don't know what he edited out of that video.
Well, you know, that's a good point, I guess. That's a very good point.
Yeah, I know. I've been upside down in a Ford, and I didn't sound anything like the pilot in that airplane.
I'm rewatching the video. The guy that was flying trail did a good job of dodging the one that flipped over.
That could have been disastrous if they'd tangled up. Okay, let's move on. Next item. This is actually from the Jetwine blog. This is Pay Attention to California School Regs, and this is an article that Scott wrote. So, Scott, you can tell us more about this, but this pertains to a bill in California, Bill 48.
This is Assembly Bill 48 that the governor of California signed into law on October 11th, 2009. And they're, you know, finally getting the language worked out now. And the primary purpose is to protect students from losing their tuition money. And it's not about just about aviation. It affects roughly three dozen careers and professions. Mm-hmm. And it applies only to privately owned post-secondary education facilities like flight schools, cosmetology, funeral directors, you name it. Okay. And if they are not accredited by an agency approved by the Department of Education, which is something you need to get student loans, federal student loans, it's there to protect it because it's a big problem. You know, especially in aviation, we had Silver State Helicopters, which, you know, scammed a lot of students. And there was a group at the hearing on Monday, the Alumni Association of Jet University, and they posted some information that I haven't been able to track down now that said California flight students have lost $36 million in tuition over the last 4 years.
Wow.
And that's what this legislation is to protect. The problem with the legislation, and Rob, you'll appreciate this, is that a California assemblyman called me on Tuesday because he saw my Jetwine post on it to talk about this. Apparently, I have become one of three people in the world that have read all 159 pages of Assembly Bill 48. So
even legislators haven't done that.
No, probably not. And the problem with the legislation is it's one size fits all. So if you read it one way, it only affects the large Part 141 pilot factories. But if you read the same couple of sentences the same way, it also applies to independent instructors.
Oh.
Anybody who provides training for a profession or career counts. So if you've got an independent instructor, you know, working with a guy on a commercial ticket or an ATP, if you know, depending on how you interpret the AB 48, that counts. So the initial fee is $5,000. The recertification due every 3 years is about $3,500. And then you have to submit 0.75% of your gross profits or whatever, I can't remember exactly, to the tuition reimbursement fund.
Hmm. Now, is this a problem in other states? Or could we see this kind of legislation expand beyond California, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I think so.
Well, you know, because go ahead, Scott.
People going to schools, these private schools, are getting ripped off all the time unless they do their homework and they go to an accredited school. And that's interesting that the rules for accreditation, whether it's a college or a private high school or a flight school through the ACSST or whatever it is that certifies flight schools, the requirements of AB 48 are almost the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I could see this going across the country, and I think it probably will, given the way the economy is going right now. And this interest in consumer protection, and California, you know, has been the leader in many different trends that have come that way. And flight schools, if they don't get off their butt and realize that they're in the education business, not the aviation business, it's going to come up and bite them again.
Yeah, and the thing that I think makes this interesting, too, is that as Scott began this session with, is that this bill was passed a year ago. And mm-hmm. and it's only now that people have started to say, what is this thing? How is this going to affect us? So no one even realized what was going on before the bill even was passed. So that means we could have 49 other versions of this already floating around in legislatures that we don't even know anything about because no one's thought to look. And so if we can get people to at least start asking questions, I think it's a good idea. However, I would like to take one slightly Republican view on something. Uh-oh. You know,
folks, remember this and cherish this moment forever.
Rob, go ahead.
Folks, you know what? If you go learn to fly at a school, don't give them all your money up front. Mm. Never, ever, ever do that. You heard that here first. My guess is that Scott would back me up on that. Don't yes. give them all your money up front.
But
don't do that. It's dumb.
But
it's
when you are going for a professional pilot program because you want to fly for a living, you don't have that choice. If you go to one of these big schools, because
they want all your money up front,
a good chunk of it. Yeah. Even the accredited schools, you know, there's 16 accredited aviation schools out there and 10 of them are for pilots. And I went and looked at all of them and you basically, it's just like going to college. You got to pay tuition for that semester. So you pay a good chunk of that money, $70,000-$80,000 up front.
We've got to talk about this. I think this is an interesting story. In fact, I know the fellow that runs the Comair Academy, since it was bought out though by the Aerosmith.
Delta Connection Academy.
Delta Connection, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you. Sorry.
I think it used to be Comair, though.
Yeah,
yes, it was. I knew it as Comair.
Us old guys knew what I was talking about. But, you know, that'd be an interesting story to talk about because as a consumer, I think if we're always talking, as Scott was, about consumer protections, I mean, there's got to be a fine line between these kinds of silly bills and protecting consumers and also not telling people they have to pay everything up front. Mm-hmm. But you're right. When you go to college, you pay for a semester.
Yeah.
But I mean, even so, well, I guess you could lose if you went to a private school. Mm-hmm. But again, what would the chances be of a Northwestern going under in the middle of the session? Probably slim.
Well, you see, it's not because Northwestern is accredited by the Midwestern Council of Colleges and Schools, which meets annually reports 10 times as stringent as those put out by AB 48.
Oh, yes. Good point.
And it goes through reaccreditation every 3 years. I taught at a boys' college prep military school for 7 years. I was their PR guy and journalism instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone through two of these reaccreditation processes from the, you know, these Midwest councils that allow, you know, that they are approved under the Department of Education. They're called Title IV agencies. And the reaccreditation process takes a year of a lot of paperwork, self-reports, everything that goes into your committee, and then you have two site visits. So they come out there and make sure that you're not blowing smoke up their butt. And Northwestern and every other accredited school out there does the same thing. So, and to get out there, a lot of private institutions do that. A lot of flight schools don't because accreditation under, I'd have to look it up, I think it's the American Accreditation Council of Colleges and Technical Schools. The initial accreditation takes a little over a year and a half, cost you about 10 grand.
And then, it would be interesting, too, though, wouldn't it, to see how many schools would be affected by this and what kind of dollar amount the state of California could actually get from the flight schools.
Yeah. Well, and it's the thing. It's going to see what happened that the assemblyman I talked to, it was his chief of staff or whatever, who was a pilot that learned to fly back in the 60s. They were looking to put a legislative hold on this because the intent of the legislation was to affect the big 141 schools, the pilot factories, as we so derisively call them. And it was not supposed to affect the small schools or the independent instructors. So they wanted to see, because a legislative fix is going to take some time, that this rule takes effect August 4th, and he was going to see what he could do to do it, put a legislative hold on that applicable to flight schools. And as far as he knew, that other professions and careers have not been affected like aviation, because aviation seems to be unique in that it has large schools, it has small schools, and it have independent instructors all providing the same instruction, you know, the same, I mean, training for the same course, whether it's private, commercial, et cetera, which is something not often found. And the guy I talked to, Larry David, I think is his name, or something like that.
Is that the guy they did the series on?
No. Oh. And I can't write. I'm terrible with names, and you'll soon learn that. Whatever. He wasn't aware of that, so they were going to try to get that fixed. So it only applied, you know, that it went after the big flight schools. But it does not affect any training given for personal development, recreation, or things like that. Right. So, you know, I've got a commercial ticket, but there's no way I'm going to, you know, fly for hire. I got it because it made me a better pilot. So if I got that training, that wouldn't be subject to AB 48. Same thing with private and instrument ratings and the like. So, and also, like you said, that if you pay up front or pay as you go, that is also exempt under the regulation.
Well, if you're wondering if there's opportunities for pilots these days in the industry in light of the economy and so forth, our next article maybe addresses that. This is from Flight Global. Title is Emirates to Recruit 700 Pilots in Next 18 Months.
Where was this from again? In Flight what?
Flight Global. I think, have you heard of Flight Global?
The name rings a bell.
So according to this article, Emirates is starting a recruitment roadshow, and they're going to be going throughout Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Americas. That kicked off in June in Madrid. 700 pilots. That's amazing.
When you order, how many? 30 A380s.
32,
additionally,
I think.
32 additional A380s. You don't need people to fly them, but
right, for what? Why on earth do they need 32 A380s?
Emirates sees
they want to kick Lufthansa's ass. That's why.
Well, Emirates sees Dubai as this future global aviation hub,
right?
And the A380 helps put that vision into reality, I suppose. And basically, so that it's not a huge
billing form. It's aviation bling for them.
Yeah.
Look what we got. You know, they're all parked on the ramp because nobody's buying tickets. So
who's got a ramp big enough to park that many, Scott?
Well, didn't you read in the news, you know, that they were building those islands for those condos they were going to build, but that fell through, so they're going to use them to park the 380s on now.
Wow, that I did not hear. But, yeah, so basically, and Emirates has A350s coming too, so I mean,
right.
I'm not sure how sustainable it is. That's another discussion for another day. But I like to point out that it's not just that side of the world. Delta is actually hiring pilots right now. I think about 200 something, and they've actually called back some furloughed Comair and ASA pilots. And I think those announcements actually came before the court ruled in Delta's favor against Mesa. So I don't think that's just replacement. I think there's actually some growth there. So, yeah, things I think are finally turning around. Actually, Continental is this summer, I'm not sure if they're coming back permanently, is actually bringing back some pilots who took voluntary leave. And I think they actually might be calling back a few furloughed pilots just for the summer. So it seems that the pilot market is, at least in the commercial side, starting to improve after really craptastic years. Because I'm sure there are plenty of qualified college graduates coming out of a school like a Purdue or an Embry-Riddle or anywhere else coming out with ratings who just couldn't find a job.
Well, I think this Emirates announcement of the 32 A380s that came out of the Berlin Air Show, I think that was kind of the major news item from that show. I don't know if any of you other guys heard any other outcomes that come close to that one.
TAM is making it, had a decently sized order too, and I'm not sure if it was Berlin, but this week Finnair said they'd be the first carrier to have the A321 with sharklets
Ooh.
Ah. Well, I did see that the EADS CEO, Louis Gallois, had had some very interesting comments, I think. On the A380, he said that he thinks it's the that this Emirates buy is the best referendum for the airplane, which, of course, is nice. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of A380 orders in a while. But he also had some...
Still going to be a couple of years before they've made any money on the A380.
Oh, it's going to be a long time. I'm not sure that they will ever turn a profit. The development costs are just so high, and the volumes are so low. But Gallois also made some interesting comments about re-engining or replacing the A320. He said, and actually this is he's quoted in Air Cargo News, but he said to launch a new airplane, which could be better, significantly better than a re-engined A320, you need a new technology for engines. He goes on, you need perhaps open rotor engines. If not, a new airplane compared to the A320 re-engine could get perhaps 3 to 5% better fuel performance. It's not enough to justify a new airline. A new airplane. If you want to get 15 or 20% better than a re-engined A320, you need to have a new concept of engine. So basically, what he's saying is that you can get some efficiencies if you re-engine the A320. But if you design a new A320, a new narrow body right now, you don't get the benefit. Boeing has more recently seems to be commenting or suggesting that they may look to a new aircraft to replace the 737. But at least here we see Airbus saying that they don't think that the economics is there to come out with a whole new replacement for the A320. So sort of the saga continues.
You know, if I were the Airbus people, I'd probably be thinking the same thing. I mean, look at how they tried to dump the original A350 on the world. And then marketplace said, this thing's a piece of junk. And Airbus said, oops, we almost got them to buy that one, didn't we? Yeah, guess we better go back to there. God knows how much that cost them.
Sure. And that launched them on the, obviously, the A350 XWB, which ends up having development costs, far in excess of what they had originally foreseen for the A350.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on we're just going to keep seeing speculation, and then I think just one player is just waiting for the other to actually make a move.
I think there's certainly a lot of that.
So I'm hoping maybe for Farnborough we'll see something.
Hopefully. All right. Yeah, well,
can I just add one quick question for our boy Wonder?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can we call... Hey, David, can we call him Boy Wonder, or is that politically incorrect?
Well, I asked John and Steven if we could start calling him the term they use floating around the offices at Flight Global.
Oh, no. What's that?
The intern. The intern broke the 747. Intern was on television today being interviewed about the accident. The intern... I actually like that better than Boy Wonder.
Well,
yeah,
yes.
You know, I kind of thinking David's got it right there.
At least the next few months.
Yeah.
Eight weeks.
So okay. Now, of course, you know what the worst part of this is? Is now I completely forgot what it was I was going to ask the intern.
Something about Airbus, maybe?
Yeah. It'll come to me at some point. I'm sorry. It just... went in one ear and out the other. It's gone. So let's just move on.
Okay.
Wait, you're totally sure it's gone? No chance?
Well, probably. It'll come back to me. Like,
okay.
Just real quickly on this Reuters story. This is UAL and Continental putting together a management team. So the bottom line here, I think, is that the two are moving ahead, assuming it would appear that they're going to get approval to for United to buy Continental. And they're starting to plan the going forward management team, which will certainly have fewer people than are on the combined teams of the two airlines right now. Dan, any insight into this, or is that kind of it?
Yeah, I really didn't see anything definitive there. It seemed like we'll figure it out. But I did find interesting that the article mentioned is what's going to happen to John Tague, just because he's been so pivotal in what's been going on at United over the past year and a half, and I think can be held responsible for a lot of the improvements we've seen at the airline, and we just really haven't heard anything from him lately. So I'm not sure if he's what his role will be, if he's even interested. I mean, I'm sure with United's stock prices being pretty good lately. I'm not sure when he got in, but I'm sure he has stock options they can cash out on. Who knows? Maybe he's on a beach surrounded by naked women. Well, who knows?
I thought the thought attributed to Tilton in this article was kind of interesting. In that Tague would have strong professional options after the merger.
That was some really good corporate speak, right?
I know. What does that mean? I mean,
it means he's going to be looking for a job.
I think you're.
Yeah,
right,
that, that that's the sense that I got as well.
He'll have much more time to spend with his family.
Very good. Okay, just a couple more quickies. Back to general aviation. Duluth News Tribune. This is demand rises slightly for new Cirrus jet. Now, this is about the Cirrus Vision jet. It's still in development. It's supposed to go into production in late 2012. And there was a recent, I guess, press conference or web conference, I guess, with some Cirrus officials speaking with buyers and prospective buyers talking about this this jet. Rob, this is basically a VLJ, right? A very light jet?
Yeah, it really is. It's the single-engine light jet that Vern Rayburn...
This is the Cirrus thing. This was...
No, I know. I was going to say it's the very... I was going to make this very cool connection there.
Okay, I'll shut up now.
It's the jet that Vern Rayburn would have liked to have had. It did look a little bit like his.
Yeah, it
except
doesn't.
It's probably actually going to come to production. But again, carries... It has quite a nice... size cabin for a single motor jet. It's just not real fast. It's only a 300 knot jet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to go above flight level 280 because they don't want to put RVSM equipment in it for the higher altitudes.
But single Williams engine.
The key, I think, that came out of the conference was that they had lots of engineers on the call and lots of salespeople and training people really hyping the aircraft, which is okay. But then Brent Waters, the CEO, talked about the fact that they've spent $65 million so far developing the airplane, and they need another $65 million to finish it. But after that, they'll be really cool if they get the $65 million. So that, once they get that extra $65 million to finish the project, I think it could stand to be a pretty cool airplane. But of course, Cirrus is owned by a venture capital company, so that's what has everybody in the industry really worried, is that they may just say, we've had enough of this, let's just get rid of it. And it's too bad, because if that does happen, because Cirrus really does make a nice product. I really do like it.
Yeah, sure.
Well, if I remember correctly, that venture capital company that owns it is in Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
They're owned by the Arabs. So
that's
maybe
right.
That A380 order that Emirates just made is maybe it's not looking so good for Cirrus now.
Yeah, that well, use up all the money.
Oh, no. You know what the A380s are for? They're going to be to carry the parts for the Cirrus Vision jet back from Pongo Pongo, where they're going to make the wings or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, according to this article, they have 431 orders.
Yeah.
For this out there, which is that's pretty significant, and they've it looks like they're still keeping the price under $2 million a pop. So
yeah, I think it's 172 or something like that.
Yes,
at last call. And and of course everybody knows, seriously, building airplanes is not near as easy as people think it is.
Yeah.
I mean, we all took pot shots at Airbus years ago during the A380 debacle and then the A350, and then it was Boeing's turn. The only ones that seem to have had relatively easy times building some of their airplanes have been the Embraers and the Bombardiers on their regional jets, and the rest of them are just, well, look at poor Eclipse. I mean, Eclipse went belly up, and now, of course, there's a company, Eclipse Aerospace, trying to bring it back together. So I think, obviously the Cirrus people are hoping they don't have to have that interim step of a bankruptcy somewhere, but it's going to take a few more bucks.
And Mark, dumb question. What market is this supposed to be targeted for?
These are for owner-operators, people that are coming out of piston twins. Maybe they're flying a Baron now, or they're flying a Bonanza, or they've been flying perhaps a small King Air, or even a Cirrus itself.
Yeah, actually, when I interviewed Waters at Oshkosh this year, that the primary customer, the airplane is seen as a step up from the SR-22. And that if they pull you know, people from Barron's and Bonanzas and the other stuff, that it'd be great. But the airplane was designed in terms of performance and flying capabilities or qualities as a step up from the SR-22.
Yeah, because if you get in the cockpit of the Vision Jet and you've had any experience with a Cirrus, you'd feel right at home. I mean, you really would. And it's actually more comfortable in the cockpit of the Vision Jet than it is in the SR-22. And the SR-22 is pretty comfy as it is.
Yeah, it's designed for a normal size human like me.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, nice aircraft.
So, yeah. Well, can I add one more piece of news about a single engine V-tailed general aviation jet?
Well, yes.
Have you guys heard about the Subsonics? It's a kit-built airplane here in Oshkosh that John Medet is doing. Anyway, they started their taxi test a couple of weeks ago. And as they said, they discovered some instability as it transitioned from a high-speed taxi into the speeds for takeoff. So that it's back to the drawing board.
Hmm. Well, remember, we had Jeremy on the show, six, 8 months ago?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was just after Oshkosh.
There was an incorrect FAA incident report because apparently things got a little squirrely and it went off the high speed and it went off the thing, and there was an FAA incident report, but it never flew. They were just doing some high speeds, but and I've done a couple pieces on the airplane, and it's great, but it makes sense that a single engine V-tailed jet tail dragger monowheel with wingtip rollers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see how, just one brake, so you don't have any directional brake. I could see how that got kind of squirrely.
That could be a little tricky, I think.
Yeah, but anyway, it's back to the drawing board. They don't know what they're going to do because they are focusing on their eFlyer and on their 1X, which is basically a single seat Sonex, which I need to go see because they said I'll fit in it. Because John Manette he's a little guy. So we joke about him designing airplanes for a normal size human like me. And he says he's done it with the 1X. So we'll see.
Okay. Very good. All right. Let's close out the news with an item that came in from Mrs. V. This was from Gatling, Virgin Atlantic's Pervy New In-Flight Cocktail. Turns out that on Virgin Atlantic, at least during this summer promotion, if you're in premium economy or upper class on certain flights, you get to have a complimentary Virgin Redhead.
This is just for Dan.
Now, Dan, before you get too carried away with that, the Redhead is not a flight attendant, but is in fact a drink.
Oh, come on, Max. Let's do this right. It's just a cocktail, a saucy blend of muddled raspberries, fresh lemon juice, canis, framboise liqueur, shaken with Bombay Sapphire gin, and topped with just a float of champagne.
I don't think Dan's old enough to drink those yet.
Yeah, I'd like to point out that if I were to be offered said cocktail, first, A, I'd have to be able to afford a premium economy on Virgin. Secondly, I would have to be 21. Actually, I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly how the rules go. If you're on a U.S. carrier flying to Europe, the U.S. law applies, which would be 21. But if you're on a European carrier, the law of the home country would apply. And I believe it is 18 in the UK. But I'm not sure. Maybe if there's someone who knows a little bit of aviation law could get back to us on that one.
Wait a minute. You telling me that the Virgin Redhead is a drink and it's not a girl?
Catch up.
How do I get my money back?
Oh, I mean, this is typical Virgin. I mean, they are the definition of sex sells, so...
Scott, lately we've received a number of emails and messages from listeners that have there's been a common thread in that they're asking for information or advice about getting started in aviation careers and how to go about training and what kind of training and so forth. So I thought it might be interesting to kind of get your feedback on a couple of them. So we can start off with Justin. Justin writes in, "Hey guys, once again, a great show. I just have something I want to get your opinion on." And Justin says, "I was thinking about what I want to do in my future, and I've gotten it between a pilot and an engineer. I do have a couple of problems. The cost to train to be a pilot is ridiculously high and something my parents cannot afford to put me through. But commercial aviation is something I would like to be when I grow up. Engineering, especially mechanical engineering, is a big part of me. I'm a huge car fan as well. And then he goes on and talks about he's considering possibly Jackson University as one college. They have a great aeronautical division. He also says that a second choice might be to go to the Air Force Academy, and where all students, he says, graduate with an engineering degree, and I can join and I can train to be a pilot there as well. Sort of lastly, an option might be, he says, the Civil Air Patrol for the U.S. Air Force, the Civil Air Patrol or the U.S. Air Force Auxiliary. He says, I learned this is a great way to be introduced to the Air Force at a young age. Scott, do you have any advice for Justin? How do you go about thinking about these things?
With cold pragmatism.
Okay.
Because it is terribly expensive, no matter which way you go. And also the opportunities are shrinking that, like the Civil Air Patrol, not as many kids fly there as used to. And they only go through solo because it's so expensive. The Air Force Academy or the Air Force, well, actually the Air Force Academy has a problem. Not everybody that comes out of the Air Force Academy is a pilot. You still have to compete for a pilot slot just like everybody else. That I'm sure that you get a couple extra brownie points for that, but it does not guarantee you a pilot slot. But if you was looking for a good engineering degree with an opportunity to fly, I would suggest the Naval Academy over the Air Force Academy, because the majority of the pilots coming out of undergraduate pilot training today are not going to airplanes, they're going to UAVs. I don't mean to rain on his parade, but I think one of aviation's problems over the past 20 years is we basically been lying to our prospects. You know, you can become a private pilot in 40 hours and then you can get this great job as an airline pilot. That's not the reality of the aviation industry today. So I think that the best thing that we can do to any prospects is not to be mean about it, but to be honest with them. And say that, you know, it's a great career, but it ain't going to be easy. That, you know, to go out and get the necessary pilot certificates and ratings that you need right now is going to cost you $80,000 and take you 2 or 3 years. And there's no way around it, you know, unless you win the lottery. And
there's start playing Powerball.
Yeah. You know, and my wife's been playing that with the ladies at work for... my wife was a 6 foot redhead, by the way. Yeah.
You're in trouble.
Who's been, you know, and we haven't won yet. So, I mean, aviation is still a great career, but I don't think that it's more difficult to get into today than it was 20 years ago. But yet people are still telling basically, quote unquote, the same lies to get people in there, because what aviation, you know, flight training, whether it's, you know, individual or schools or universities, you know, they're making their money on turnover by attracting new people, like Justin, the other things that like that, when there's no guarantees on the other end.
So what you're saying then, I guess, is that you need to go in with your eyes wide open.
Wide open. Yeah. It's like anything else. Caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware.
Because some of these institutions or companies maybe are overselling what they can deliver to you the other side in terms of career opportunities. It doesn't mean they don't exist.
Correct. You know, they do exist, but you also have to look at the career. I have never met an airline pilot who hasn't been furloughed at least once. Rob, will you attest to that? Have you?
Yes, and having had airlines canceled beneath me. I mean, same thing. But, you know, I think it also goes back to what we were talking about earlier about that California bill about aviation people being good consumers. And traditionally, traditionally they're not. They get so enamored with, I just want to fly airplanes. I'll do anything to fly airplanes. That they put these blinders on and they make some really dumb decisions sometimes. And I think
they're like a high school kid on his first date.
It is. Well, I was obviously way better on my first date. because I did it in college, but that's another story.
But it's like anything, that, and that's a problem with aviation, because it is a passionate, you know, profession and avocation. But unfortunately, you know, you, given the time and money it takes and the dedication it takes to become a pilot right now, it's a decision you have to make with your mind, not your heart.
And that's true, because when I look back on how much money it cost to learn to fly, for, you know, when I got all my advanced ratings and things in the early 70s, it was a substantial amount of money. But if you were to bring those same dollar figures forward today, it would probably still be a great deal more expensive today. And there aren't near as many options. Right. Now, we may see that as the airlines start to hire, as the majors are never going to have trouble finding people. But it's the regionals where it's really going to hurt. And so, you know, people say, gee, I can go spend $75,000 for this great education, and I'm entitled to a job that pays $18,000 a year. Is that such a great job? And how long will I be there? And you have to think like that.
Yeah. Well, really, the best path, if he wants to fly, go this way: become a dynamite engineer, get a job that, you know, an engineering job, because most of those pay pretty well, and get one that does traveling. Then become a pilot, instrument rated pilot, buy yourself a Cirrus, and that way you can write off your flying as you travel around for your job. If you want to have reliable flying where somebody else pays the bills, that is probably the best opportunity that exists today.
And as we heard before, you're pretty good at traveling on someone else's dime, right, Scott?
Yes, indeed. My wife calls me stingy or cheap and stubborn. I prefer frugal and persistent.
Yeah, well, she's probably right.
Yeah, well, my dad has of German ancestry, and my mother is Scottish.
Ooh, there you go.
So, yeah.
Well, let's consider the message that Steve sent in. And before I relate the part of it that's on this topic, the beginning is kind of interesting. Steve is a first officer for on an A320. And Steve mentions, firstly, I love the podcast, especially now that there's a bit more European news coming through. As it's great to get an informed view of what's going on over the pond.
Did he mention me?
No, not specifically.
Okay. I was just curious.
Steve mentioned he saved up a few episodes as he was flying away from home base for a week and needed something to keep him a bit sane. Luckily, I was flying from Berlin Schönfeld, which is currently playing host to ILA 2010. That's the
Schönfeld.
Schönfeld. That's the Berlin, Berlin the air show Berliner. That, right, he was there. So when I wasn't working, I was being treated to some wonderful displays. That cool. My favorite, now get this, my favorite moment was when I was given...
Were the Virgin Redheads there?
No,
I'm sorry.
This was the clearance.
Oh, okay. I just wondered.
This is better, I think. This is the clearance he was given. This is a quote. Behind the landing, Messerschmitt ME-262, short final lineup and wait behind. And he says, truly a once-in-a-lifetime radio call. But on this topic that we're talking, Steve says he's now caught up on his podcast listening, felt needed to get in touch regarding some comments made recently about new pilots coming through training, or lack thereof, and the huge costs involved. The general feeling I get from the geeks was that this is a bad time to get into the industry, as clocking up that level of debt for little or no reward is financial suicide.
You didn't get that from me, though.
No. While I do agree that any kind of debt is naturally undesirable, I would argue that now is actually one of the best times to get into aviation. Steve goes on, I'm currently a first officer flying the A320 for one of Europe's major carriers and have been flying the line for a little over a year now. When I began my training 3 years ago, times were good. Money was in plentiful supply, fuel was cheap, and airlines were booming. Starting my training, I was convinced that this was the right time, having already delayed my dream by 6 years because of the events of September 2001. By the time I had gained my commercial license, however, the world had changed. Suddenly, the airlines were losing money. My job prospects looked grim, and now I had a large amount of debt with a high rate of interest payable. I was lucky, however, and thanks to the low-cost mentality of the airline I fly for, they continued to grow during the recession, and I got a job after only 6 months. We are starting to already see the recovery taking place, with some airlines back into profit and people flocking back to the skies. Let's see, he goes on, airlines are, in a very short space of time, going to require a large influx of new first officers to fill the spaces left by the current recruitment bans and pre-planned fleet expansions. The picture that's being described is one of, you know, there being opportunities out there for pilots that either between the expanding or the recovering economy or the fortunes of the few airlines that have been profitable all along, that there are opportunities out there.
I think there's always an opportunity. I mean, this year, I think, in fact, we have Lewis Smith coming up from flightops.com in a couple of weeks, who's a real guru about this stuff. But he's always said that you know, that you have to work harder when the economy is bad. But you can't wait until the economy is good to train for a flying job. It doesn't work that way. Everyone in this business knows it's cyclical. And when you're ready, train. I mean, and you just take your chances, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But if you wait until it really starts to look interesting before you begin, you're years away from a job, any kind of a job. And that's usually a mistake.
Hmm. No, I agree. And I think barring a double dip recession, which seems less and less likely, but who knows?
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, but it seems those who are either in school right now or going into the schools will probably be looking at a much more favorable job market than current graduates, I'd say.
Well, let me get one more in, because this is, I know we're kind of going a little bit long, but this is from Ben, who's 15, and I wanted to make sure we get his comments in too. Ben said, well done for making 100 episodes. I look forward to the next one. I've only been listening to the show for about 20 episodes. That's only 20 episodes. It sounds like a lot to me. And in between the shit that you talk, I mean that in a good way, you are very entertaining, there's some very good content. I'm a very keen modeler. I like modeling because it combines building and flying. But I also have a great interest in aviation, as a good friend of mine works in the R&D department of Airbus. I am sure I would like to follow a career in aviation. I've got my work placement at the Airbus wing manufacturing plant in Broughton, is it? But I'm not sure whether to go into the engineering side or the piloting side. Can you make some suggestions? As well as wanting a blatant shout-out, I do genuinely want your opinions, so no pressure, guys, but my career does potentially rest in your hands.
Awesome.
The power to mold young minds.
It's an important responsibility that we don't take lightly, right?
No, and you know, the one piece of advice I'll give these guys, having come up the hard way with flying, is that, oh my God, please go get a decent education and learn how to do something besides fly airplanes. It doesn't mean I'm not dedicated to it, but after 40 some years of watching this thing go up and down, you really will benefit from that insurance policy of having another, I don't want to say a trade, I don't mean that, but it being able to do something else when times are bad can certainly be a
plan. Have a plan B.
Plan B.
No, actually, no. Use the aviation as plan B. Go get your engineering degree, and that will help you a multitude. You know, basic engineering makes you a better pilot. You know things like physics. I think basically go get your engineering degree and then work on getting your pilot's degree. It'll make you a more well-rounded person than if you go get your pilot's degree and then what?
Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I want to throw in one more thing, that what makes work satisfying is the intellectual challenge of it. And that he's going to get, you know, I mean, he likes building models and everything. This is a smart kid who likes the creative challenge. And engineering will give him that intellectual challenge and stimulation through his entire career. Well, look at the intellectual challenge or stimulation that pilots, how it has been decreasing since the 60s. And, a prime example is our two Northwest buddies who, you know, came over here to Eau Claire, turned around before they did that really long final into Minneapolis.
Or to bring it to more up to date, this weekend they had a Jetstar pilot texting on final approach and didn't have the landing gear down.
Oh my gosh. I hadn't heard that one.
Well, here's my question, though. I mean, who needs this physics thing? I mean, why the hell is that important? Let's be honest. All that matters is Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, Dan, don't listen to Dan.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh no, I live by Excel spreadsheets. That's how I keep my life organized.
I'm sorry, just being the finance patron, I just wanted to get up there and say
there is, of course, one last method, of course, that we haven't spoken about in terms of being successful in aviation. Marry a really hot woman with a lot of money.
Is that what you did, Dan?
Yeah, and then she could buy you an airplane. Yeah, oh, that's what I did. Yeah.
So it's completely for money, not for love.
Well, it's.
I thought it was for the free therapy.
Well, at my age, I can't remember what it was for.
And it doesn't matter either.
Okay, Mrs. Mark, you can use that for your divorce court proceedings.
I was going to say, she'll be listening to this. Oh. Actually, my daughter listens to these, and then she tells her mother what she hears. So
that's awesome.
So let me just offer this as sort of a balance to the realists in the group here. This is the idealists' position, and this is something that this is not original to me. In fact, I'm not sure who the source of this is. It's probably the best advice I never followed. But it goes. Let's see if I can. It goes something like this: think of the thing that you love so much that you would do it all day long without being paid. That's how much you love it. Go do that, become better at that than anybody else, and everything else will follow, including the money.
So, when's our first podcast?
Well, thank you.
Paycheck.
Thank you for the rainbows and unicorns portion of the segment.
It's. I think the important thing, though, is you got to follow your passion. No one can tell you what your passion is. You have to decide what, and if that's being a pilot and flying, or if that's being an engineer, you have to decide what your real passion is, and just follow that. So that's the idealist in me.
I think you're absolutely right, though, Max. I mean, I hear people. In fact, you know who actually said something about this? They interviewed Captain Sully some months after he put that thing down in the Hudson. And they were talking to him about a career as a pilot, and he said, honestly, he said, I wouldn't recommend this career to anybody anymore because it's changed so much. And I think that you cannot forget the fact that just what you said, you have to love what you're doing. And trust me, I know a lot of pilots who have come to just hate their jobs because they were so enamored with it that they saw the money and they saw the travel and the benefits, and it's a lot of work. You're gone from home a lot. It can be, 13, 14, 15-hour days. And you have to really love what you're doing in order to do that. And so I guess what I'm – but the converse of that, though, is that if you're not going to fly because you think the first job won't pay back your college, then you're probably not the right person for that anyway. I think it's going to take a little more than just looking at it from an economic standpoint.
I gotta say, though, I think we should give these kids credit for, because I forget, I think Ben said he was 15, and I think Justin was around the same age, too, that they're starting to think about this now.
Yeah.
Because, there are some kids in my senior high school class who was, like, getting to the beginning of senior year, like, oh, I should figure out what I should do with my life. So,
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Not that I'm thinking that, not that everyone should go into sophomore year of high school knowing exactly what they should do, but I think it's great that now, these kids are thinking. I don't want to say kids because they're only 5 years younger than me, but that they're thinking about their future. And I what I would recommend is something that I've done when I was in high school is email, try to find people online and email them. You won't always get an email back, but if there's someone that has a career that might interest you, it's worth a shot.
Someone who can act as a mentor.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've always done that I still do is I pop on airline websites and read executive biographies and see, okay, how did this person get to where they are today? And just to show you as an example, I mean, if you email someone and you don't hear back from them, you're exactly where you started. But I emailed, I actually met someone in person at a conference who works for U.S. Airways. And I just talked to him. I said, oh, I'd like to learn more about your job, whatever. I'm just expecting a quick little email exchange. And he's like, oh, I'll fly you down. I'll give you a tour of the airport, whatever. So that's one thing I love about aviation. There are really nice people in that if you try to reach out to them, you'll often get a reply back, usually a very nice reply back. So that would be my advice to any young people out there. Try to contact people who have careers that you're interested in.
That's great advice.
If any of our listeners out there want to help these guys, send us your contact information and we'll put you in touch with them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because
we could be a network nexus too. So we're not necessarily the best people to talk about the subjects, but we'll be happy to direct them.
And not to get a little emotional or anything, but I think it's kind of cool that they're teenagers listening to our podcast and looking to us for advice.
Yeah, and really, because I talk to a lot of teenagers, we get to meet, and they all know I'm a pilot, and they're all really excited about flying, and they ask all these questions that show their interest is fueled mainly by low level yanking and banking, in flight simulator, or they've been watching the Red Bull air races, and that they said, well, what's it take to be a pilot? And I'm trying not to be off-putting, but, I go through, this is what it takes to be a sport pilot and a private pilot and working up to the career. And once the majority of the students I see in the middle school and the high school level, once they see the amount of time and work, I don't mention money, what it takes to be a pilot, it's like, okay, I got better things to do with my life. So anybody that, like these great guys here that are interested, we got to nurture those because they truly are a limited, resource that we should, do everything in our power to
encourage and support.
Encourage and support and make go forward because, they are the exception rather than the rule. Because today, as I write next week, that being a pilot is no longer a relevant career to Americans today.
I wish it was different, but. Okay, Scott, thanks. Thank you for your insight and your comments. It's been great. Is there anything that you have going on that you wanted to let our listeners know about? Any projects or exciting things coming down the road?
Well, I'm working on a bunch of different things, but most of my aviation work is the stuff that really gets me excited I do on jetwine.com.
Wow. So,
you're only saying that because Rob is here.
No,
it's funny. I could just jump in for a second.
Okay.
I've had people. In fact, we're sponsored by Cessna, of course, and honestly, so I know a lot of the big mucky mucks there, and we talk every so often. And I can't tell you how many times people from Cessna and some of the other organizations that read our blog, often say, that guy Scott, he's got some interesting things to say.
Yeah.
And he really does. I'm amazed sometimes, Scott, that you have kept going as long as you have. I really expected you to burn out. Not that I wanted you to, of course, but but I thought the guy can't have any more ideas left. I mean, but he just keeps coming up with stuff.
Yeah, well, and Max, it goes back to what you're saying, that I enjoy Jetwine more than anything else I do in aviation because it allows me to follow my passion.
Hmm.
That I have different interests in different areas of aviation, and this allows me to express what I see, to prognosticate on the future because I don't have a vested interest in any particular segment of aviation. I have no fear of saying things that people that have a more venturous interest want to do that, and that's where I get my enjoyment. So my premier aviation gig, the thing I enjoy the most, is the writing I do for Jetwine.
Great.
And the good thing is too is he's way bigger than me, so I'm not gonna fire him.
Yeah. I've made some great friends through there. Yeah. We've got some interesting discussions. I mean, I've got my whole little cadre of guys that send me hate mail when I write things. I just love it.
That's when you've arrived. Again, thanks. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. Look forward to having you back on the show again.
Would love. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Good night, Scott. Thanks for coming.
You bet.
And now with This Week in Aviation, here's David Vanderhoof, the official Airplane Geeks historian.
Thanks, Max. Welcome to This Week in Aviation, Volume 2, Episode 18, June 13th through the 19th. On June 13th, 1980, the last produced Concorde, the 16th of the series, is delivered to British Airways. On June 14th, 1923, the Kiwis form an Air Force. Okay, the New Zealand Permanent Air Force is created using surplus Royal Air Force equipment and an enormous staff of 72 individuals. The Air Force was the result of forward thinking by Sir Henry Francis Wigram. The first aircraft of the fledgling fleet were Avro 504s and Gloucester Grebes, most of which were purchased by Wigram himself, as well as the land in Stockburn they operated out of. Later, that airfield would be named after him. On June 15, 1927, a U.S. businessman, Mr. Black, charters a KLM Fokker to fly from the Netherlands to Batavia. This is would be the first international chartered flight. On June 15, 1946, four blue F-6F-5 Hellcats of the famous Grumman Ironworks take to the sky from Craig Field in Jacksonville, Florida. Euro numbers 79049, 79393, 79914, and 80097 are flown by Lieutenant Commander R.M. Butch Boris, Lieutenant J.W. Barnitz, Lieutenant Mel Cassidy, and Lieutenant J.G. Gale Staus. That show would demonstrate the skill of the naval aviators who fought in the last war. At the time, the team did not have a name, nor would they fly the famous Diamond Formation. Those would come later. However, it was clear from that day forth that the blue-trimmed aircraft in gold would be the best the Navy had to offer. Happy birthday, the Blue Angels. Another Fokker story. June 17, 1928. Amelia Earhart leaves Newfoundland to become the first woman, albeit a passenger, to fly across the Atlantic. The flight was piloted by Wilbur Stutz, co-piloted by Lewis Gordon. The flight from Trepassey, Newfoundland, to Burryport, Wales, lasted 20 hours and 40 minutes. The flight was flown on instruments by Stutz in a Fokker V-11B-3M named Friendship. At the time, Earhart was not certified for instrument flying, but was charged with keeping the logbook. When interviewed after landing, she said, "Schultz did all the flying, had to. I was just baggage like a sack of potatoes." June 18th, 1971, Southwest Airlines flies its first flight from Dallas Love Field to Houston, then San Antonio. And because Dan is going to ask, the reason why it was the first flight of Southwest Airlines, even though the airline was created in 1967, was up until that point, the airline was known as Air Southwest. So it was the first Southwest Airlines. And last, first flights that occurred during the week of June 13th through the 19th, Lockheed F-117A Nighthawk, and that was June 18th, 1981. And lastly, a shout-out to Max and Rob and all the other fathers out there, because next week is Father's Day here in the United States, so happy Father's Day, all.
Oh, thank you, David.
Wait, do you have, like, a stash of his – this is a weird question, but do you have, like, a stash of stories that you didn't use, like, last year? Like,
yeah. There was one story I repeated today. Do you know which one that was?
No.
The Amelia Earhart story.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I just wonder if anything would be repeated.
Never ask an artist how they produce their work.
And besides, there are some things that are worth repeating.
I was wondering for, like, first flights and stuff, but never mind. This can all be edited out because it's embarrassing to me.
The didgeridoo means it's time for the Australia News Desk. Here's two of the craziest guys we could find south of the equator. It's Steve Vischer and Grant McHaren from the Plain Crazy Down Under podcast.
Strike! Strike! Come on, Steve!
Come on, Grant. When can I get back in the boat?
Boat? This was supposed to be a yacht. Max said that we would be able to use his yacht to sail home from the US, from the party, to get back home in time to do the next AusDesk episode. Ha!
I got to tell you, when Max said something about the family yacht, this is not what I had in mind.
Yeah, well, Benet says it's a really big, beautiful yacht, but yeah, he must really hate me.
Yeah, Grant, I think he's still upset at you for pinching all that silverware. I told you not to do it.
Just because it's a dinghy. I mean, you know, okay, fine. I stole the silverware. He's still upset. It's my fault that we get a dinghy, not a yacht. But it's not my fault we ran into that damn whale. You know that.
Listen, I can't help it if your navigation skills are not up to scratch.
Well, dude, you were there going, "Oh, look, it's Moby. Oh, let's go say hi to Moby." And over we go, and splat! Yeah, one flipper, and now suddenly we're in a Tupperware container. Thank you very much.
I just thought it would be friends with us. Anyhow, get off. It's my turn to get back on.
What, you want to sit in the Tupperware container? Fine. Right, there you go, mate.
Ugh, crikey.
You get in and I'll show you how to really pedal.
Yeah, all right. You just used to... Hey, what's that over in the distance? Look, it's a bottle. Quick, Grant, swim over and get it.
Wait right here. Hey, you're right, it's a bottle. Conk. Bloody waves. Here you go.
Oh, you'll have to do it. I'm too busy steering.
Oh, okay, fine. I'll open it. Oh, you want me to read what's in it? Hang on.
It looks like a newspaper.
Yeah. Oh, hey, look, some news from home.
It's truth. Looks like a copy of Australian Aviation.
Oh, sweet. Sweet. Our favourite magazine.
Absolutely. Nothing like some in-flight entertainment, Grant.
The guys must have realised that we were going to be missing it and left a few dropped strategically from a few Trans-Pacific via Australia aircraft. Thanks, guys.
Yay. Well, listen, Grant, you keep pushing the boat behind and I'll read this one. It says here, Air Asia X to be separated and an IPO's on the way. The Air Asia Group has announced a restructuring that will see Air Asia X operate more independently from the Malaysian carrier, while the long-haul affiliate is also aiming to launch an initial public offering during the second half of 2011. Gee, Grant, we might just be back in time for that.
Oh, I reckon. We'll be in the first half of 2011. You watch my kicking seat. Look, look, look. That's how you kick.
You Kiwis, you always know how to swim properly.
Yeah, well, you know, 6 months in a leaky boat, mate. Say, Steve, you know why Air Asia X is doing an IPO?
I give up.
They reckon if Garuda can IPO, anyone can.
No.
Hey, that was a soggy rim shot. But, you know, even when they're separating their long-haul arm and going for an IPO, it hasn't stopped them introducing dirt-cheap fares. The latest is that you can get from the Gold Coast to London for $217. Mate, did you see the ad here?
Gee, at $217, the way the Australian dollar's been crashing lately, it would only be about 50 cents US, wouldn't it?
Well, it's getting pretty close.
I tell you what, Grant, can you imagine what the in-flight catering service would be like on a $217 Australia to London fare?
Here's your pack of peanuts, make them last.
Yeah, I tell you what, oh, have a look at that one. Wow.
Hang on, I'll just swim over and pick it up.
Yeah, looks like lunch.
Yeah. Hey, how do you like your seagull, raw or raw? Yeah,
just pluck it if you could, please, mate.
Oh, hey, I'm the one doing the paddling. You can at least do the plucking.
That's right.
It's already been salted now. Hey, check this out. Jetstar are going to fly direct Melbourne to Singapore and direct Auckland to Singapore, but the kicker is they're going to base their aircraft in New Zealand and Singapore.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Grant, and obviously Jetstar is doing everything it can to restructure its operations and keep Qantas mainline as isolated as possible from their operations. Yeah, we've seen this sort of stuff before where not only airlines but other companies try and move as many of their operations outside of Australia in order to get around our employment laws, our higher wages, this sort of stuff, and I just wonder whether this is what they're aiming at doing here.
Oh, definitely. Like with Qantas Connect out of New Zealand. They fly 737s, they're painted like Qantas, they look like Qantas, but they're flown by Kiwi pilots who are actually being paid less, as we've reported previously. And so now Jetstar's doing the same thing. They're going to be paying Kiwi pilots, paying Singapore-based pilots, and the indications are that they're going to avoid a lot of the full Qantas level, international level pay fares and pay rates. And of course, the Australian and International Pilots Association, which represents pilots in both Qantas and Jetstar, has gone up in arms about this. And they're saying, this is the interesting part, apparently they weren't consulted about this, but they're saying that it's Qantas offshoring more Australian jobs and they're trying to avoid Australian rates of pay and conditions. I don't think it's so much Australian rates of pay and conditions, because I've heard some pilots reporting that they actually get better conditions and pay if they fly Jetstar in Singapore rather than Jetstar here in Australia. But I think possibly what we're looking at is the fact that it's international flying being done by JQ, not QF. And remember what I said the other day, if it's new, it's JQ.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, it wouldn't be the first time a business has tried to entice people over to their sector of the operation, you know, with wonderful conditions or things that at least on the surface look like they're wonderful. And as soon as people are there, well, you know, they often find that things perhaps were not as they were advertised.
Yeah, well, it does cost a lot more to live in Singapore than it does in Australia. But I do know people who have, three or four of them, bachelors, they've rented the same apartment with multi-rooms and done quite nicely, living off their per diems and things like that. But the big one here, I think, is that if the rumor that I'm hearing from these pilots is correct and you do get paid more as a Jetstar pilot out of Singapore rather than out of Australia, you're still probably getting a lot less than a Qantas mainline pilot is, because they've got decades of union bargaining and so on that's ensured that they've kept really high pay rates and good conditions. So I think this is really big time about new international airline flights not going under the Flying Kangaroo, but rather going under the Orange Star.
Well, I got to tell you, Grant, that's all nice, but I can't concentrate on any of this news. That seagull feather's got stuck in my teeth.
What, did you eat all of it?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, do you want another one? Look out. Pull!
Hang on. I'll swim over and get it.
Right, Grant, I don't know how much more of this stress I can take. We've been out here for days. How much distance have we travelled?
Hang on. If I do my triangulation from that lighthouse, I think we've gone 3.4 kilometres.
Oh, right. We should be home by the time we retire.
Well, anyhow, hey, is that a boat in the distance?
Yeah, look, it's a miracle, Grant. We're saved. We're saved.
Woo-hoo, yeah, we're saved. We're saved. Whoa! It's not slowing down. I don't think it sees us.
Stop, stop.
What fate lies in store for our Kookaburra Cobbers? Can the Dinkum duo survive an encounter with the USS George Washington of the 7th Fleet? Tune in to another exciting, all-action-packed episode of The Australia Desk, only on the Airplane Geeks. No seagulls, whales or Australia Desk personnel were harmed in the making of this segment.
That was awesome.
I think those guys are in the wrong business. I think we really enjoy the Australia Desk reports each week and don't in any way want them to stop. But I think those two could make a lot of money doing something together.
I completely agree. I you know what I'm amazed at? They are getting so creative.
I know.
Not just the sound effects, but the stories are good. And I mean, you know, what was it? They were eating seagull.
What? Yeah, so
maybe
the
I should
nautical
ask. Seagull on a stick or something. Or
yeah. We really appreciate Steve and Grant for putting those together. Make sure you guys, all everybody listening, follow them. PlaneCrazyDownUnder.com. Make sure you check that out.
Or as it's more appropriate. Known as Airplane Geeks Junior,
Airplane Geeks Light.
I'm sorry. I'm going to get so much crap over that. I love you guys.
It's Australian for podcast.
Right, exactly.
What are you going to go work for them now, too, Dan?
I mean, if they were to entice me financially, perhaps
dip into their vast corporate reserves.
A little seagull on a stick.
Hmm.
Oh, by the way, Max, thanks for putting in that clip with me and Grant and Steve from about a year ago in the episode 100 outtakes.
Oh, man. All right, we got a lot more listener mail that we're unfortunately not going to have time to go through. We did get one voicemail.
I would like to thank Max Blight, Bob Mark, Dan Webb, and David Van Hoop for 100 episodes. That's a great achievement, 100 episodes. You guys are great. Keep up with the good work. Yours truly, your listener, Adam Sintek.
Thanks to Adam for that. We also got, I'll mention an email we got from, I'll call him WH, who is an international pilot. He listens during breaks, listens to us on breaks during long haul flights.
So he's not listening to us in the cockpit right now, even.
I hope
speak.
Not. But he's also a member of the Airline Pilots Association, and he commented on some of our statements concerning unions and airline labor. He says he's 100% behind the Spirit Pilots, and this is only the beginning. The reason for unions are as valid today as they were 50 years ago. So. And he goes on with some other great comments. And just to mention that, you know, we've been talking about that a little bit, and we've got some ideas to bring some folks in from the sort of the aviation labor side of things onto the podcast. So we're working to bring those guests in for that perspective. So hopefully we'll have something in the not too distant future on that. Just mention quickly, Ken sent in a great email. Keith also. He's going to be at Farnborough. He was asking if any of us are going to be there. We talked about this before a little bit. Are you going to be at Farnborough, Rob?
I might be. I'm not. The decision has not yet been made.
Okay.
I will not be. But what I'd like to point out is that it's such a big event for flight. So there'll just be me and another reporter in the office. The entire week at Farnborough is going to be very lonely. Unfortunately, that other reporter is the reporter that owns the 787, the 747 model that I broke.
You're toast.
I'm hoping tomorrow I will have placed an order for new wings, so hopefully everything will be okay.
All right. We'd really like to thank our guest, Scott Spangler from the Jetwine blog, for joining us this episode. That was great having Scott with us. Also, thanks again to Steve Vischer and Grant McCarron from the Playing Crazy Down Under podcast for the Australia Desk Report. And now we can start the shameless self-promotion section. David Vanderhoof, tell folks where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at DMVanderhoof. You can find me on my blog at whatjustflewby.com. There should be more postings going on now that I have my computer back. And you can find me on Playing Crazy Down Under.
Very good. And Dan Webb?
You can find me on my blog at thingsinthesky.com. Hopefully some better posts will come now that I'm finally getting into my groove, into a normal schedule here down in D.C. You can also find me on Twitter at Dan Webbage. And one thing I'd like to add, just because I like delaying Rob. but seriously, to everyone who emails us, first, it's a pleasant problem that we don't have time to read every email. But also, even though we don't have time for everyone on the show, we do read every listener comment. So
right.
Please don't hold back.
Maybe we should do a whole episode just on listener mail. Okay, and Rob Mark, where do people find you online?
Well, let's see. At the podcast down under. Oh, no. Wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no.
I didn't mean it.
Yeah, Rob's not a turncoat like a certain other.
You're trying to stick to that. Yeah, we'll see how that works.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, I meant jetwine.com where Scott and I hang out, and Jetwine on Twitter. And who knows where else you might find me at any moment of the day. But certainly, I want to second Dan's. I can't believe I'm agreeing with Dan, but I'm agreeing with Dan that we really do all read all the comments from listeners, and we listen to the voicemail, and we really love it. So please just don't worry. We'll get to all of you eventually. So and of course, the more good things you say about an individual person, of course, the more that person will of course support your candidacy as being the top listener of the year, which is, I think, how we got all this going with the guys down under when they were supposed to send the box of money, which, of course, never showed up.
Well, actually, I'd like to, speaking of, it wasn't a box of money, but my dad IM'd me this morning. Well, actually, yesterday morning, he said, by the way, an envelope came for you from Australia.
Ooh,
so,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so now I can
Much
join that a week. Yes, it's like in that elite club with Mr. Vanderhoof. And one other thing, just I know that
Do I rub it in that I also too got a package this week?
Oh,
damn it. Nah.
But
I didn't get a package. Did you get a package, Max? Well,
I got a whole shipping container.
Oh. Okay.
But since that one listener was talking about Amina at Farnborough. If anyone listening, I know it's still a little bit far off, is going to Oshkosh, shoot us an email because Rob will be there. And this past week, I booked my flights, or rather,
great.
John Ostrower booked them for me. So that was awesome because my credit card has too many expenses as is right now. So Rob and I will at least be there. So please shoot us an email if you're going to be around. And Max and David, you should come.
Cool. Have to try to work it out.
Say something, Dan. You know, John Ostrower has a sense of humor. So if I know John, he did indeed book his ticket to Oshkosh. You're going to Guadalajara. Yeah.
No, well, actually, we booked it, and then we did. What was nice is because John made the booking, he's elite with United, so he was able to book exit row seats. But we also realized that even though John and I, we get along very well, there's no way we can sit together on a flight because we would both want the window seat too much.
Oh, my.
Okay, I'm Max Flight. You can find me at 30,000feet.com or on Twitter at Max Flight. See airplanegeeks.com for show notes and listener comments. If you send us email, also you should know that it'll likely get posted in the comments section on the blog there, so other people can see and comment on your comments. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at Airplane Geeks. Also, send your email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. We also have a fan page on Facebook. It's called Airplane Geeks.
More specifically, the Airplane Geeks Podcast.
Best idea, though, is to leave us a voicemail because, after all, this is a podcast and we're kind of into audio. So we really appreciate folks leaving us a voicemail.
And also, what's really great, not all listeners know this, but we use Google Voice for our voicemails. And sometimes the automatic transcriptions are hilarious. So you should send more voicemails.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good source of amusement. And Benet just crashed. It did.
Excuse me?
Well, and if you want to call the Geeks Online, call 861-GEEKS-01.
361.
361-GEEKS-01.
Oh, by the way, Ms. Wilson, because I know you're listening, thanks for backing out on our dinner plans from last week.
Was this public humiliation?
Well, granted, the city is kind of a drive for Benet, but apparently, for some reason, spending time with her husband is more important than me. So I don't get that, but whatever.
I don't blame her. Also...
I love you, Benet.
You can subscribe to the Airplane Geeks podcast on iTunes or the Zoom Marketplace.
How much does it cost?
It's actually absolutely free. And you'll get your podcast delivered to your computer at no charge and auto-magically. Actually, we have quite a few. About a fifth of the listeners grab it right from the webpage, and that's one option. But you don't have to have an iPod to use iTunes, or you don't have to have a Zoom to use the Zoom Marketplace. And there are some other alternative software options. Also, I'd mention that our opening and closing music is provided by Brother Love. We haven't mentioned that in a while. You can find him at www.brotherloverocks.com.
And he does.
He absolutely does. Yeah, his music is fantastic. Best thing you can do for us, find some other people that aren't aware of the Airplane Geeks podcast and tell them about us. We'd really appreciate that. So join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Talk to you later. Good night.
Thanks for listening.
I know. Well, it started again.
Because the file gets too big.
Yeah, it gets huge.
Yeah, the file's huge.
Yeah, it gets pretty
big. Oh, my God. How big is that file? It's got to be 100 meg?
No,
that's what she said.
It'll be...
Oh, we already did that.
We did that one. But that was a very good rendition.
Bloody waves. Here you go. What's in it? sorry, what?
I said that at the same time.
Oh, okay, fine. I'll open it. Oh, that's brilliant. Who needs sound effects?
Who needs Foley?
Hey, well, that was a soggy rim shot.
Yes.
But I'm not going all that. Okay,
but don't splash. Yes. We're being rescued by the awesome might of the Royal Australian Navy's submarine fleet.
And can you hear that clatter, clatter, bang, clatter, clatter, bang, clatter, clatter, bang? No, no, it's Collins class. Yeah,
sounds like a Collins class submarine.
Yeah, let's do that.
First, two things. I'm offended you didn't wish a happy Father's Day because of my potential children.
Your potential children. I hope they're just potential.
Yes. Secondly, David, when do we start coming up on your 1 year anniversary of segments?
We're there, aren't we?
You mean last year? It was last week, dude. Didn't you listen?
Oh, really? It was?
Yeah, it was last week. David. Last week was David's also his 1 year anniversary.
Ah, well, in that case, I was not paying attention.
How surprising. You never read the article, don't pay attention to the podcast. If it isn't about airlines, you don't care.
And what do they call him? The intern?
Yes.
Yeah. The intern.
Or actually, as Ostrower put it in a tweet for Follow Friday, the office wrecking ball.
Mm-hmm. That's a little adventure with that one model.
I felt so bad, and I'm never going to hear the end of it.
You are never, ever going to hear the end of it, Dan.